Do you see a lot of the heroin overdose horror stories coming into the ER room?
We unfortunately do. We see quite a few, and this is an issue I've followed throughout my entire career, which has been right around 25 years now, and we've always been a focal point of receiving people who have medical emergencies through overdoses, and it's unfortunately, instead of getting better through the years, it's gotten much worse through the years, and we still see quite a few of these folks.
What is it, the is it Narcan? Does that work for heroin overdoses?
Sure. Narcan is the trademark name for the drug naloxone. And what naloxone or Narcan does is it competes with the same receptor in the body that the heroin or opiate drugs bind to. And by competing for that, it actually displaces those drugs, which basically in layman terms means that it reverses their effects. So heroin and opiates, one of their primary side effects that they have is they decrease people's breathing or their respiratory drive. And the naloxone or Narcan, it basically reverses that effect and allows them to breathe again, as well as bring their level of consciousness back up.
For your part on the 26th, John, what is it you want to get across to people when you get up to speak?
You know, what I've been trying to get people to understand for 25 years and would be my primary goal is people need to understand, the lay community, that this is not the victims of heroin and opiate addiction are not people who are just bums in the street or you know, somebody who are very different from them socioeconomically or on educational levels. These are their neighbors, their friends, their families. Those are the people who are victims of opiate addiction now, including heroin addiction. And it's a very different time in the last 10 and 15 years from where we were 35 years ago with heroin addicts. What happens now is young people and people of every walk of life who are educated, maybe do well socioeconomically, are the last people you'd think would end up in a heroin addict. They end up using pills and either recreationally or through medical needs, and most commonly recreationally, and then they get addicted to those pills. Then when they can't get their pills anymore, they end up on heroin because they need to feed their addiction. So my number one message to summarize all that is that this can happen to anybody. It can happen to you or your children. And it's not just some dregs or derelicts of society that this happens to or lower socioeconomic classes. This is really affects everyone.
Is there any kind of move afoot in the medical community maybe to back off on, you know, prescribing legal opioids and things like that, or maybe, you know, limiting how much they prescribe so that it doesn't get people, you know, hooked on opioids?
There definitely is. You're right on target with the questions and where a lot of the emphasis in the medical community is going. Where we were 25 years ago was most medical specialties throughout the world, as well as agencies and healthcare agencies and governmental agencies, were really emphasizing that we should treat pain and we should treat it with opiates, and we just should not allow people to be in pain for periods of time, if at all. And as a consequence, we really emphasized opiates and pain pills, if you will, as a primary process to treat people, and really lowered our thresholds for prescribing. That also meant we prescribed more pills for longer periods of time. And then we also prescribed longer-acting drugs, too, like OxyContin. And one of the things that we just did not understand, and we certainly do understand and well appreciate now, is that there are certain people who are much more likely to develop addictions, even though they're on shorter or even intermediate, which would be a couple of weeks period of time or a few short months. There are certain people that for some reason will develop addictions. The second thing we underestimated is we completely underestimated the power of diverting drugs and diversions. So when you've got leftover drugs, we generally thought 20 years ago everybody just throws them away or gets rid of them. What has happened in the last 20 years, though, is there's become a large secondary market for recreational use of these drugs as people sell those pills in the street for large amount of money, and there's a high demand. As a consequence of now understanding those mistakes that we've made in the last 20 years, what we've really started trying to do is pull back on our prescribing, who we prescribe for, how long we prescribe, the number of pills that we prescribe, all the elements that you're touching on. We're working very diligently at reducing that kind of history by pulling back in the number and frequency. And then ultimately what that does is it really reduces a lot of the supply. The last thing I would throw in, too, is that for a period of time, about 10 years ago, there were these large, even what people called pill factories. You could go to certain doctors in certain states and get really large numbers of these pain pills and then take them home and sell them. So there were people going up and down the interstates going to these so-called pill factories, these doctors and clinics. And law enforcement has gotten very interested in those folks, and over the last 10 years has shut down a lot of those operations, as well as even the medical communities have gone after those folks in the medical licensing boards to really rein that kind of behavior and that kind of prescribing in so that we can get those large volumes off the streets.
Isn't there part of the Affordable Care Act or something that there has to be more databasing of information so that different doctors can see what someone's prescribed to so they can't go doctor shopping?
Yeah, there's the Affordable Care Act really did not have anything specifically around opiates. However, as we've evolved with the Affordable Care Act, there have been a lot of pieces of legislation that have been ongoing in the different states as well as at a federal level. So they're pretty much moving along simultaneously as we move through the last couple of years in the medical health care system. And one of the biggest efforts over the last 10 years has been to get each individual state to have prescribing databases that then physicians and physician assistants or anybody who prescribes opiates or controlled substances can log into those websites and see real-time data on the patient that they're getting ready to prescribe for, the number of prescriptions that they've gotten over the last couple of days, weeks, months, or even years, and who has been prescribing. So that gives the prescriber a lot of insight as to whether this doctor or this patient might be doctor shopping. It also can be used in an investigative process for looking at the frequency for prescribing by individual physicians. So there's a lot of really good applications for this, but the primary thing that it does in each state is it allows the provider who's prescribing to be able to log on and see that patient and the frequency with which they've got prescriptions.
Just to wrap up, I guess one thing, if parents show up on the 26th, I guess you want them to know that it's not always someone else's kid or someone else in another strata or something, that it could be their kid that is going to try this stuff.
That's exactly right. If they're, normal person, anybody who it is, white collar, blue collar, it doesn't matter what your walk of life is anymore, socioeconomically, education levels, opiate addiction cuts across all of those demographics and can affect everyone. And that's just the one thing that is the hardest piece in my experience to communicate to parents and to just lay folks in the community, is to get them to believe that this can happen to them, this can happen to their children, and that they have to really be aware of that. One of the things I used to do when I would go and speak to different community groups, particularly if there was a parental group like a PTA or something like that in a school, is I would say, who's one of the top suppliers of opiate pain pills to your kids? And, of course, all the parents would say, well, gee, I don't know. And I would say, you. All you got to do is look in your cabinet, and I will bet you that quite a few of you in your medicine cabinet have got some pain pills that are sitting in your medicine cabinet that you're just saving for a rainy day or saving for whatever it is that you're going to get injured. And those pills ultimately get diverted. So that's another thing we've got to get people to understand is when they've got pills that they're not using, they need to get rid of those, dispose of them appropriately, and just be aware that any access to these drugs ultimately creates an opportunity for someone to divert them and the recreational use, and that recreational use leads to addiction.
When somebody comes into ER, doc, and they're ODing on heroin or whatever, once they get treated, do you notify the police or do you get them into addiction treatment or are they just sent away? What's the procedure?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. It's a great question. What addicts and people who are having emergencies need to understand is when they are brought into an emergency department as a patient, our interest is in helping them. It's not in reporting them or calling police. And our complete focus is on assisting them in any way that we can and which they're willing to accept. So if it's a life-threatening emergency, truly respiratory arrest or cardiac arrest where someone's heart is stopped or their breathing is stopped, we focus entirely on trying to save their life and restore their breathing. And once that happens, and the great news is that because of drugs like naloxone and other things that we do in modern medicine, we quite frequently can save these lives, and we do that literally on a daily and weekly basis in our emergency departments here in the region. And once we do that and we've got hopefully a conscious, alert patient, then we start a conversation about are they interested in recovery or addiction services. Unfortunately, most of them, in my experience, are not ready for that. All they want to do is get the heck out of the hospital and get back to being wherever they were in their life before they ended up in the hospital. But there are a few who you can make some traction with who are interested in addiction therapy and recovery services. And if they are, then we'll plug them up. We don't make a phone call to police to report people. That's not our primary cause. We do follow state laws with things that we have to report around infectious disease violence, so like penetrating trauma, gunshot wounds, and things like that, we do have to report.
Right.
If there is no specific legislative statute within the state that requires us to report, and for opiate addiction, usually there's not, then we don't report someone direct
right.
into the police. So people need to understand our focus clearly is on their health.